Hello, my darlings, and welcome to the apocalypse. Oh, I mean, welcome to Radio Wasteland, the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm your host, Chauncey Hallworth. This is my co-host, Kara Kittrick.
Hello.
Kara, what kind of awesome news do you have for us today?
So I want to cover an actual legit topic that I just thought as a change of pace, like, it's funnier, I think, if we cover Bigfoot and UFOs and stuff, if sometimes we do, like, journalism, too, at the same time. Right. I think it throws it into sharp relief. So anyway, I feel like this isn't getting a whole lot of attention in the American press. I mean, it is in newspapers, but not unlike the nightly news, and you have to go looking for it. And that is that leaders around the world, not really in the U.S., but around the world, are using the coronavirus as an excuse to increase their power and scrap democracy, just like the tinfoil hat I said they would. So the biggest example, Hungary. Hungary's parliament just gave its leader, Viktor Orban, the ability to basically pass laws unilaterally, an ability that has no expiration date, is not legally tied in any way to the resolution of the crisis, and is already being used to pass laws that Mr. Orban just happened to want that have nothing to do with coronavirus. For instance, last week he declared gender transition illegal in Hungary, because that was the squeaky wheel in post-coronavirus Hungary. That's what needed changing. He also unilaterally passed reforms to the school system so that Hungarians can be, quote, proud of their history, which in this case means that history books will now be required to cover their Nazi involvement in World War II in a more positive light. In Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, who, if you don't follow Israeli politics, you probably don't know, has been very unpopular with a large segment of the population, and has also been under investigation for taking bribes and just general corruption, has just so happened to decide that the courts need to be shut down for coronavirus reasons right before his trial was slated to begin. Also, this happened at a time when the courts were getting involved over a disputed election and were expected to give power to his opponents. Now they're shut down. Leaders in Jordan, Thailand, and the Philippines have given themselves the ability to basically censor any media they don't like. The interim president in Bolivia postponed their elections indefinitely. The UK is trying to give massive new powers to border agents and police. So, and of course, many, many countries, too many to list now, are trying to expand the surveillance capabilities to, frankly, a rather alarming degree. So these are just some of the many examples of what's happening right now in a lot of countries that don't have the same checks and balances that we do, and even in some that do. I mean, Israel is generally known as a polyfunctional democracy, same for Hungary, at least until Orban got into power. Back to you, Chauncey.
Okay, I think my first question is, what's the leader of the Philippines' name again?
Rodrigo Duterte.
Okay,
he's not the one. For being a crazy person. But.
Yeah, well, there's one of them who's in the news for doing this, and I forget what country, but his last name is like the entire alphabet. It's like just insane. So I was trying That's to set awesome. You up. I was trying to set you up. Well, he was in the news about a year ago because conspiracy theory was that he was dead, and he came out to show that he was alive by driving Brodies around a fire pit. And I don't know. We'll have to get the video out there. It is over the top. He also sings in a band with his son. Some of these dictators are just insane. Like you started out there talking about Turkey and, of course, gender transition.
Hungary. Yeah, not Turkey.
Turkey,
we all know, is fully on the dictatorship train now.
Right. Turkey makes me think of Hungary.
That is fair.
The gender transition, I mean, what does that have to do with anything? I mean, are they postponing all elective surgeries? I mean, that might make sense, but if it has anything to do with gender transition specifically, that is absolutely...
No, it's just a very conservative country, and he runs a far-right party, and now he has the power to rule by decree, so that's exactly what he's doing.
Right, which you very much illustrated afterwards by saying that they were putting Nazis in a more positive light.
Yeah, Yeah, because, you know, they don't want the World War II section of history books to be a downer or anything right. for the Hungarian kids.
Right, because if anybody knows anything, it's that, you know, over the past 60 years, 70 years, 80 years, the Nazis, man, they really got a bad rap.
Yeah.
That's like sign number one of dictatorship. We're going to go easy on the Nazis. Be all, somebody needs to shoot that guy.
Oh, gosh. Well, now Radio Wasteland is going to be censored in Turkey. Hungary. God, gosh darn it, Hungary. Yeah. Why am I beating up on Turkey and ascribing all? The thing about Hungary, though, is, like, it's a member of NATO.
Right.
Like, it, you know... It is a perfectly functional state, or at least it was until right now.
Now, in this case, so, did they elect to give him these rights in the case of Hungary?
Well, so it's more of like a parliamentary system. So the executive is not separate from the Congress, like it is here. Rather, the executive is just sort of the leader of the Congress, like in, say, Britain, where the prime sure. minister is just, you know, the sort of the party leader. So, yes, his party elected to give him these powers. And, you know, presumably the reason, because they have a majority control of the parliament right now.
Right.
And you know, presumably... all the other party officials are fine with this because they know that, you know, maybe one day they'll be the chief bigwig of this particular party.
And right.
They'll be the ones with the unlimited dictatorial power. So,
you know, when this was first going on, I saw it as an opportunity for Donald Trump to go down as one of the greatest presidents in history.
Back in January, maybe.
And we find out, no, even now he could. And because our two greatest presidents in the history of the United States are considered the greatest presidents for the exact same reason. Both George Washington and Abraham Lincoln had the opportunity, George Washington had the opportunity to seize absolute power, and he turned it down. Abraham Lincoln did seize absolute power, but still allowed elections to go on and then return the power to people after the war. That's why both of those guys are considered so great, because they're holding up these ideals. And so I thought, you know, Trump's smart about this. He could go down in history as the guy who gave power back. But
yeah.
I don't see it happening. But
I don't know that. I don't know that Congress is actually exactly champing at the bit to give Trump any more power.
Yeah, yeah. And then Israel. I'm always a little confused by Israel because they're one of our closest allies, yet they're in a potential dictator situation. I don't understand how we are.
I've been calling close it a dictator with, situation is overstated.
Well, he shut down the courts before his own trial. I mean, it's weird.
I guess it's not overstating it by that much.
Yeah. I mean, it is a step towards
yes,
that potential.
That is why this is so alarming. So basically, to go into a little more detail, what happened was that there was an election. And basically the opposition party won, but the results of the election were contested. It was sort of a Florida 2000 type of situation. So the courts basically said, okay, this opposition guy won. Now he has to create a coalition government in, you know, the deliberative body. I forget what it's called. And they were expected to, you know, make more rulings on that and enforce it more, but now Netanyahu's saying that the courts can't meet because, you know, right. no gatherings.
I
don't exactly know what's going to happen. And, you know, if you look at newspapers from that country, like, there, people are scared and freaked out, rightfully so, because this is kind of an unprecedented place. Not that I'm an expert in Israeli politics or anything. I don't want to try to get that impression. It's
No, I get you. And actually, this has been an issue for me over the years because I'm interested, especially here on Radio Wasteland. We have the opportunity, the platform to get somebody to teach us about this, because Israel has always been interesting because it's pretty polarizing. And I've always been very curious, but I've always been too scared to have any sort of guest on that has an opinion on Israel. I need a third party. Because if you're too into Israel, maybe you're rosing it up. And if you're too opposed to Israel, there's a lot of things that could go on there. And so I've always been too scared to chase it down. But it is something that I've always wanted to know more about.
Yeah. Well, Netanyahu is very much on the expand, you know, type of camp, but it is worth noting that that's not like a monolithic view in Israel or anything. Like the opposition left-wing party did win, and that's not necessarily their point of view on the situation.
I see. So there's a lot of people there that have the attitude of live and let live with Palestine and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think to some extent it is the leadership and the politics that, I mean, it's kind of like here, there a lot of pandering happens to, you know, relatively small groups of people in this country who happen to live in, you know, electorally important places.
And people who show up to vote, you know.
And more so that probably, the voters, you know.
Yeah, it's not too different from in the news right now. They're trying to either block or push through voting by mail because they're thinking that it'll change everything, you know.
Yeah. Which, I don't know. I think Trump is kind of in a tough position with vote by mail because, you know, if he does pass it, then, as he correctly pointed out, Republicans will have a very hard time in elections going forward. And if he doesn't, well, this election in particular is going to be difficult because who's going to stay home? Old people,
right?
Which is his constituency. So my prediction, you heard it here first, is that the only way for the GOP to handle this is by just going whole hog with voter suppression. They have to make it very, very difficult for anyone to vote.
I see.
In the November election.
Huh. So I'm thinking I was. I was automatically thinking that we were going to go to this vote by mail. So let's put five.
Oh, no way.
Let's put $5 on it.
Okay, $5.
Yeah, but $5.
Republicans will never pass vote by mail. They will fight it to their dying breath.
Well, I know you're smarter about this stuff than I am, so I'm ready to lose that $5. But for the fun of it, I'm going to put that $5 up anyway. All right, you're listening to Radio Wasteland. Up next, we have our guests, Derek Hayes and David Flora, who are making a movie called High Strangeness in the Borrego Triangle. Borrego is how you say it. And it's basically an area in southern California that is chock full of sightings all the way from Bigfoot to ghost lights to UFOs. There's just a massive amount of sightings there, and they're going to cover some of them with us. And, you know, if you like what you hear, maybe you can reach out to their Kickstarter and give them the last little bits they need to finish the movie, although they are literally tens, maybe hundreds of dollars away from completing their Kickstarter. So it looks like this movie is a go, regardless of what you do. All right, you're listening to Radio Wasteland. Come on back.
KCNR is proud to announce that we are now live at 96.5 FM, as well as online, and as always, heard on 1460 AM. Weekday mornings, wake up with the Sue McClain News Hour, followed by Free Fire Radio, your talk radio station at the epicenter of change in downtown Reading. 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. Noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. 3 to 6, the hard-hitting constitutional expert, Mark Levin. Monday through Thursdays at 6 p.m., local shows feature everything from the paranormal to pop culture to unsung heroes of our area. 7 to 9, Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. And finish your weekday with the Chris Plant Show, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. K KCNR, now on 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and always online. More than ever, we're your locally owned, community-connected talk radio.
Hi, I'm Chuck Kenny with Shasta Gas Propane and Shasta Tanks. Many people may not know that we started a propane tank refurbishing business about 5 years ago. We pick up tanks from various propane companies, bring them to our yard in Anderson, where we blast the old paint and rust off, repaint them with a very durable paint, and then install new valves. The tank is just like a new tank. We primarily sell these tanks in truckloads of 45 to other propane companies. I'm telling you about our new business because many of you are installing generators because of the probability of the power being shut off this summer. Shasta Gas Propane now sells standby generators and propane tanks so that you won't be left without power. Give us a call at 365-3793 so we can come to your house and give you a quote on a generator and tank. Again, that's 365-3793.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
Radio Wasteland comes to you from the Reading studios of Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM and AM 1460. Visit Radio Wasteland at Instagram at instagram.com/Radio Wasteland.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guests, Derek and David. You know, we're going to talk about the movie that you guys are working on. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. The Borrego?
Borrego.
Borrego Triangle.
Uh-huh.
And, but first, I figured we should cover, you know, who you guys are and where you came from. You guys both came from, it appears, two different podcasts, Monsters Among Us and Blurry Photos. Is that right?
That's right.
So what's Monsters Among Us and what's their focus? Actually, you, Derek.
Yeah, that's me. It's a show I started about 4 years ago. Essentially, it's a call-in show about monsters of all kinds, ghosts, aliens, UFOs, Bigfoot, cryptids, that kind of thing. But more importantly, the people that have seen these strange things. So they call in with their five-minute story. It's in the form of a voicemail. I kind of share the story and talk about it compared to historical experiences other people have had or other experiences I've received. And we have a good time with it. We share probably 10, 15 different calls per episode.
You know, that's interesting. I was wondering how you pulled off a call-in show because, you know, for one, it's hard to get an audience. It's reliable to call in.
Very true.
But for two, on top of that, you have times. You know, it's hard to pick the right time for everybody. But this call in and leave a message, I really like that. That's a smart way to do it.
It is because it allows me to edit down the calls. I can get a lot of the ums out, a lot of the spaces, and kind of get to the meat and potatoes of what took place. Mm-hmm. And then we can move on to another story. I know people have short attention spans these days, so the quicker we can get through a story and move on to the other, the better, I think. And we want to try to cover as much ground as possible per episode, and this really helps us do that.
Right. And then Blurry Photos, great name, got to say.
Thank you.
Yeah, very clever name. You know, what is the format of that podcast?
Blurry Photos. I started out with a host back in 2012, and at the beginning of 2018, I flew solo because the host left to pursue life. You know, having a kid, getting married, all that good stuff.
All the boring stuff.
what I try to do is pick a topic of paranormal nature, Fortiana, anything weird in history, famous figures and things like that. And I try to do as much research as I can and present the topic and then present each side of the case, as it were. So I like to say I'm open-minded about this. I want to learn about it. But every time I do the research and look into the stuff, there always seems to be some kind of explanation or something that, you know, people are either looking past, or they don't want to accept.
Right. Right.
So I try to be balanced in my approach to the storytelling, but also give people a scientific view of it. I guess I'm just kind of skeptical in nature. So, you know, if there is something to be explained, I will let it explain itself.
Right, right. So your format is a bit more of a deep dive into a single topic.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm skeptical in the same way. I talk to people, obviously, at least once a week doing this. And I came to this paranormal stuff. You know, my audience is going to roll their eyes that I'm telling the story again, but you're new. And I came to this paranormal stuff through a love of fiction. And then I dug deeper into the fiction, and I, you know, you eventually ask yourself, is it possible any of this stuff could be real? And, you know, but how did, and I assume most skeptics came to it that way, but how did you guys come to it? Let's start with you, David, because you were just saying that you were a skeptic.
Well, for me, it was, I would say it was similar to your path in that I really have always been interested in mythology. And different cultures, you know, their different mythologies are incredibly interesting, but, you know, the monsters in particular are always so fun to read about. And
were you a D&D kid?
D&D, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, magic, all that good stuff. Yeah. And even the toys Monsters in My Pocket, if you remember back in the 80s, that had a profound influence because here you have all these cryptids and creatures of mythology, and there's a little, you know, snippet about their history and stuff right on there, and just wanting to know more. And yeah, like you, is there any truth to this stuff? I want to know about these things, these conspiracies, these,
right,
you know, just amazing facts. So that's how I approached it.
You know, some people get pulled to it from experiences. What was it for you, Derek?
I actually was an experience. I was about 10 years old. I saw what can only be described as a black panther in southeast Ohio. Essentially, it was just like that's what it was. It was a black panther. It was a huge monster of an animal, black as coal, fast, heavy, a big creature. We saw it. I told my father about it. He'd seen it before and just didn't tell us about it. And that kind of was the catalyst to get me going. I started reading a bunch of books, children's books, of course, at the time. And it's kind of just like a gateway drug at that point. It's just introduced me to Bigfoot, UFO, aliens, that sort of thing. So basically once the floodgates were open, it was just kind of soaking up all the information I can get my hands on. And I never really did take the fiction angle. It was always nonfiction for me.
Right, right. Yeah, well, that probably makes an interesting combination of storytelling and observation as you guys are going out doing these things that – you know, one is coming from imagination and one is coming from factualization. Don't get me wrong. I'm sure there's a big crossover between the two at this point, you know,
yeah.
But, you know, I'm sure that creates different perspectives for telling a story.
Oh, for sure. For sure. You know, David's definitely the research guy. He's the guy that's going to, you know, dig into the books and get all the stories for us. And I'm the guy that's going to go out in the field and say, oh, this track is this track and this track is that track, or something could live here, something can't live here. Look at the terrain logically, look at the environment logically, and see what the possibilities are there for something to sustainably live.
Right. Okay, so let me try saying this again. The Borrego Triangle?
That's right.
You got it.
So what is the Borrego Triangle? Should I be directing this at one or the other, or does one feel that they have a better answer?
Well, I feel like we'll probably bounce back and forth on this one.
All right,
I'll kick it off here, David, if that's fine. Essentially, if anyone's familiar with Southern California, there's a state park called Anza-Borrego State Park, and it's essentially the largest state park in the state of California. And it's got all kinds of different microclimates. There's mud caves, there's badlands, there's palm oasis, or oases, I suppose I should say. Just tons of different little microclimates. So I started going there, exploring, hiking, camping, that kind of thing. And anywhere I go, I'm obviously interested in the tales and legends from that area. And I started digging into it and found there was all kinds of firsthand encounters from the area of all sorts of different things, from Bigfoot, UFO, ghost lights, you name it. It's been reported there. But nothing has been written about it. There have been no documentaries made about it, no television shows, or very few television shows, I should say. So it kind of was the catalyst for me to kind of get this idea going, and that's when we roped David in, and it was kind of all downhill from there. We went out in October and actually shot a it's like a 4-minute trailer for a proof of concept, basically, for what we want to do with the actual documentary.
Yeah, so I watched it.
We got our boots on the ground and
very professional,
we got out there. Thank you. Yeah,
thank you.
So we got out there and did some exploring. We got some connections with some people, so we're super excited to get back there and get going. But back to the question at hand, the Borrego Triangle is sort of what we started naming this area. Basically, the triangle is the perfect shape. You know, you have the Bennington Triangle, the Bermuda Triangle. There's tons of these things. So It was kind of the go-to. We kicked around, David, polygon and all kinds of different shapes.
Oh, yeah. Borrego Star of David.
So it is a term that you guys coined.
It is, yeah. It's just an easy way to describe the strange phenomenon that's taking place in this vast swatch of land. And this park is, it's about the size of Rhode Island, or it's a little bit smaller than Rhode Island. So it's a very large area.
When you say triangle, and when you're talking about phenomena like this, people automatically get a picture in their head. You know, it's from the Bermuda Triangle, the Bridgewater, like you said, Derek. It elicits a vision to someone, or someone actually can latch on to that and know what you're talking about. Whereas if we did go with the you know, the Borrego rhomboid, people would be like, is that a band?
Right. Yeah, actually, yeah, that sounds like a band, doesn't it?
KCNR is proud to announce that we are now live at 96.5 FM, as well as online, and as always, heard on 1460 AM. Weekday mornings, wake up with the Sue McClain News Hour, followed by Free Fire Radio, your talk radio station at the epicenter of change in downtown Reading. 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. Noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. 3 to 6, the hard-hitting constitutional expert, Mark Levin. Monday through Thursdays at 6 p.m., local shows feature everything from the paranormal to pop culture to unsung heroes of our area. 7 to 9, Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. And finish your weekday with the Chris Plant Show, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. KCNR, now on 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and always online. More than ever, we're your locally owned, community-connected talk radio.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide 3 delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
You're listening to Chauncey and Kara on Radio Wasteland right here on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. That's Free Fire Radio. And don't forget to follow Radio Wasteland on Facebook at facebook.com/radiowasteland.us. You know, in the title, in your subtitle, you say high strangeness. And this is a term that has kind of screwed with me a bit because I wasn't entirely sure what it meant. So I jotted out myself a question here to ask you. When you say high strangeness, do you mean single encounters that are so strange that they don't fit under things? Or in this situation, do you mean that so many different things go on there it can only be classified as high strangeness?
Yes.
I don't know. That's a confusing question.
No, it's good. I know what you mean for both. To me, it's kind of a blend. Yeah. High strangeness is stuff that you can't really categorize. And when you say high strangeness just in general, it kind of encompasses a lot of stuff under that umbrella. And so to me, it's a little bit of both of what you said.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in the second half of our interview, I definitely want to talk about, you know, quite a bit of the experiences that have gone on there and the sorts of things that are pulling you into there. But in the meantime, here's a fun question for you, David, as a bearded man. What brand mustache wax do you use?
I use Firehouse wax when I want it to really to hold,
right?
Not go anywhere. So
I use Suavecito when I'm going for it.
So oh.
I was just curious if my wife picked out the same brand you got. You know, the Kickstarter thing, I've thought about this before and I put it out there. Like I said, I'm maybe a little more of a creative, but I thought about it. Creative is just the term I use for creating fiction instead of reporting nonfiction. I know there's creativity in all. But in doing Kickstarter, I've always thought to myself, like, man, do I even have what it takes to do this? So with Kickstarter, is it hard to put yourself out there for the Kickstarter? And did you have a large social footprint when you started, or was this something that evolved? And was there a conversation where you basically told yourself, we can't put this on Kickstarter, nobody's going to give a damn, or something like that, you know? Because those are the thoughts that have gone through my head in the past. And so, I don't know, was it hard to put yourself out?
Well, the Kickstarter was difficult to begin with. I'll be honest. The learning curve of Kickstarter is hard to begin with, just to understand how you're supposed to format everything and the tiers and everything like that. That's all complicated stuff. But before we even reached that decision, David and I had to talk about, you know, we could reach out and try to get funding for this film ourselves. But that means bringing on producers and bringing on more opinions and more you know, people that want to do certain things with the picture, and we
too
lose
many
our
chefs
vision.
In the kitchen.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, exactly. So we wanted to do what we could to try to get complete control of this project. And for us, it was Kickstarter. That way, you know, the money coming in is from our fans directly. So we know where the money's coming in. We know what they're looking for because we've been feeding content to these guys for years now. And between the two of us, we had, you know, thousands of Facebook followers and Instagram followers. So we had a swatch of people to kind of go out to and say, hey, like, we're doing this project. We'd love it if you can come by and at least have a look at it.
I see. So the people were already there for you to reach out.
They were. Yeah. Yeah. We felt pretty confident that we were going to get it. But anytime you put yourself out there with something like this, there's always a seed of doubt in the back of your head where, you know, people aren't going to enjoy the project or they've never heard of this, so they're not going to back it. And that was why we put so much time and effort and frankly, money into shooting that trailer. We wanted to show people, you know, what this place looks like. We wanted to show our abilities and prove that we can pull this thing off.
We're over 90% on it right now, and I'm still, there's a part of me that's still like, I don't know, maybe not going to get there.
Might not make
yeah, yeah,
it.
Yeah. No, I get you, because, like, you know, I don't want to talk money, but when you type in a number, it's like you when you put in that last zero, you got to go like, to hit that button, yeah. You know, you got to feel. Yeah. And for people out there, I don't want them to think that, you know, money is how the world works. And so people need money in order to make things. It's just so incredibly hard to put yourself out there. So I'm really impressed that you guys did it, that you have such a beautiful introductory video. And I found myself watching it and being invested. So by the time I got to you guys around the campfire, I'm all, yeah, you know, maybe I am interested in this, you know.
Awesome. Well, it's good to hear that it worked then.
Yeah. So in this area, it's a state park. How old is the history in the Borrego Triangle? How old is this history that we're talking? Because some parts of your video, you seem to be talking about new people, new experiences. There's one where you're talking to a guy out of his Winnebago, and he's talking about what he just saw probably in weeks. And some of them you're talking about, you know, pictographs and lithographs and stuff. So how far back are we going here?
Pretty far, because the Native American petroglyphs, like you just mentioned there, are, well, probably what, Derek, hundreds of years old at least?
Hundreds, and some may be close to 1,000 for all I know, but they're at least hundreds. They're before European yeah. settlers came for at least that much.
So that's that plays into it, and of course the lore and the legends of the native tribes that were in the area. Then there's also a lot. There's a very rich history of ghost stories from the Old West when the stagecoach line was running through the area, and
that makes sense.
Around the stage stations, there are a ton of different kinds of stories. You get the lady in white, or, you know, one of the hitchhiking kind of ghosts that's out there, a bandit gang, you know, that shot itself to death over some money. And
that makes sense too. Yeah.
Yeah. The gold right. rush and stuff, you know, how people, you know, what greed does. And then there's also this whole cryptid aspect that dates back at least to the 1800s. And maybe if not farther with the Native American lore, you know, depending on what you read into the stories and stuff. But the cryptid stuff, hairy hominids, the Borrego Sandman is out there, Yucca Man, Zubies, I think is another one that they call. There's all kinds of names, and we're trying to figure out if it's all the same entity or if there are different things that are out there. But there are stories that go back to when the stage line was running through, and people would write to the newspapers about them. And of course, you know, they're just like there are for any stories, there are some that are hoaxes, but there are some that, you know, people swear up and down that's mm-hmm. that's what they saw. And so, and then it goes on into the 60s and 70s. So it's all over the place.
We also had conquistadors come through. We had Spanish missionaries in the, I think, late 1600s come through there. So there's a lot of history through that area, believe it or not, despite the fact that it's vast, wide open wasteland. Essentially, right. there's been a lot of human history through there.
You know, I was a punk kid in high school, and I was a big fan of industrial music. And I should have graduated in 1994, which was like the tail end and the beginning of the popularity. I'm getting somewhere with this whole thing. And I was a big fan of industrial music, but by the time Marilyn Manson came out, I was like, nah, I've met too many Marilyn Manson fan stuff. This is terrible. This is stupid. You know, because like when I was a kid, goth kids were cutting themselves, not playing with kittens in the park and blah, blah, blah. You know, I had preconceived notions. Years later, I listened to the music and I'm all, you know, this is almost a dead ringer for the music that I was liking at the time. I just couldn't hear it. Yeah. So do you find more credibility and more interest in the older stories that you can't tie a face to than the newer stories that maybe you do apply a face and a life story and a life path that you can identify with? Or do you find having that face and life path in front of you adds the credibility, and the older stories you have to take with more of a grain of salt?
I honestly feel like it could go both ways very easily with a case-by-case basis. A lot of these older stories have details that we're not seeing in the contemporary sightings mm-hmm. or the contemporary reports. These creatures, these Yucca Man or Borrego Sandman attacking people, attacking ranches and animals and stuff like that. This kind of report hasn't been made for 100 years now, but we're kind of looking at it thinking, was it more of the Wild West in terms of paranormal encounters back in the day, and it's kind of calmed down a bit now, or is it that people aren't willing to talk about it now? We're not real sure which one of those two things it is, but to answer your question, I guess, for me, it goes both ways. It's a case by case. If I can look somebody in the eye and they're telling me the story and I can see the truth behind their eyes, that speaks volumes to me over a newspaper article from 120 years ago.
For many people, their faith, their family, and their health are the most important things in their lives. Every day, the work that I do influences these things. Children go to college, couples move into their first home, people retire, businesses start, and charities are supported. All of this in part because of the work I do. I can make complicated things clearer so people understand them. I can solve problems and find solutions. People need someone to put their interests first. And for many people, I am that someone. I can lend an ear, stand with you during life's ups and downs, and provide that advice at just the right time. That's why I love my job. That's why I'm a financial advisor, Susan Eastman, with Wells Fargo Advisors in Redding, California, 243-7561. Once again, this is Susan Eastman with Wells Fargo Advisors. I'd love to be your financial advisor. Please give me a call at 243-7561.
Don't be left watching Netflix reruns this summer. Use your screen time to future-proof your career with a degree or certificate from Shasta College. One of the best investments you can make is your education. So take the first step today. Summer classes start June 8th and enrollment is happening now. High school students, summer is the perfect time to pick up some college credits. With no tuition costs and enrollment is now completely online, call 242-7500 or go online to shastacollege.edu/apply.
I'm Carlene Niver, and I have some exciting news about my restaurant, Deja Vu, voted best breakfast. We are now serving beer and wine to complement your experience with us. Try one of our many flavors of mimosas, or try one of our new delicious creations, like Morning Sunshine, our version of a screwdriver. For our coffee lovers, we are known for our cozy atmosphere with a mixture of traditional and specialty drinks. I invite you to start your day with us, whether you are craving breakfast or lunch. Located in the historic Lorenz Hotel in the heart of downtown Redding, on California Street, open 7 days a week from 7 a.m. until 2 p.m. We look forward to seeing you soon.
Welcome to the Year of the Bear, Black Bear Diner's year-long 25th anniversary celebration. Black Bear Diner first started serving up bear-sized portions of family favorites in 1995, and they are marking this milestone with a year of tasty specials, fun celebrations, and a continued commitment to give back to the community. Stay tuned and be sure to stop by the Black Bear Diner on Hilltop Drive in Cypress and Redding all year long. And help us celebrate 25 years of
Black Bear Diner.
I expected to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military. I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right?
So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to maketheconnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
You're listening to Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. You're listening to Radio Wasteland with Chauncey and Kara. Find all our shows and archives by visiting Radio Wasteland at radiowasteland.us.
Now, earlier you made a reference to there being a lot of quartz, and there seems to be a lot of paranormal quartz comparisons. I've heard people say one of the cryptid things that I really liked, for one, I watched a show called Primeval, which was terrible, but I loved it anyway. And one of them was somebody trying to tell me that the Loch Ness Monster, basically due to the way that quartz lines the loch, that it's actually creating time portals, and the Loch Ness Monster makes appearances because it's just accidentally swimming through a time portal from its own time, popping up every once in a while, and every once in a while it might go through it, you know. So is there a comparison with the quartz, you know? I mean,
some kind of connection.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, of course there, this is not, this is well into the realm of speculation, I guess.
Sure. That's the best realm to be in. I think there's something at least worthy of research with that, because we have been hearing this pop up a lot, especially lately, and they even covered it in the second season of Hellier, if you ever watched that one.
I did.
And you know, they mentioned that being down there in Somerset in Kentucky, and I think it's very interesting. I think that's a really cool and rich place scientifically to explore, just in terms of what can quartz do, what's it capable of, and could this tie into some of this phenomena we're seeing? Because it actually ties in some to the ghost lights with the desert winds kicking up. There have been some scientific studies done where that can cause some static electricity and things like that. So that could explain, you know, at least part of that. But I love the idea of having some kind of a time portal out there. Something.
Yeah, like, yeah. I forget who told it to me. It wasn't even on the show. But it stuck with me because of that show, Primeval. I'm all like, yeah, sure, why not? You know, I mean, I like this other stuff. Why not this one? You know?
Yeah.
So have you guys, you two have spent quite an amount of time out there walking around in the dark in the day, I assume. Have you guys confronted anything that made you go, wow, other than the black helicopters?
Well, I did. David wasn't with me for this. I actually went camping, man, it was over a year ago with my wife. We just went for overnight. We wanted to get out of town for a day. So we went to Anza-Borrego. And there's a place called Tamarisk Grove, which it's on the list of one of the most haunted campsites in America, but I couldn't find a lot of backstory on it. So that's something else we really want to dig into. But as we were sitting there at the campfire late at night, I'd actually come back from doing some investigating at some of the places we talked about in the trailer. We could hear in the woods next to us bipedal footsteps, and we'd hear them until we would, you know, talk about them and they'd stop. And if we would just kind of go about our business for a couple minutes, we'd hear them again. And this continued throughout the night. And we never did really figure out exactly what it was. I don't think it was a humanoid or anything like that. But it was ironic that we were at a quote-unquote haunted campsite, and right, we did hear some strange footsteps. I don't know what it was, but it was a small encounter that I had there.
And I assume you're still married.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So you can't be too crazy. She stuck around. So
well, she just doesn't know any better, I guess.
Right, right. Okay, well, we're not too far here from the end of the show, so I'd like to talk a little bit about how people can find out more about you, where they can get information, where they can contribute. A lot of this is going on the Kickstarter page, but how about what they get when they contribute? You know, that's a part of the Kickstarter platform, you know, so how's that work?
If folks listening want to go to Kickstarter.com and search for Shadows in the Desert, that is the name of the documentary, and that'll pop up for you. We're about 2 weeks from the end of the campaign, and every little bit helps for sure. We're asking for 20,000 right now, and that's going to be very bare bones to do anything with that. But we have a couple of stretch goals that will help us do more, and the more we get, the better the quality of it will be. As far as some of the tiers for that, if you give it the $10 level, you get a podcast that's exclusive to this project, and Derek and I will be putting out this podcast every other week from the time that it funds until, well, probably through the finish of the project and maybe even the release.
I see. So that's like an insider investor updates.
Exactly.
Kinda let them know that
behind
you're
behind the scenes or killing. Yeah, yeah, what's going on. And we also have a couple of backpacks that we want to put together with some curated items, things from around the area, keepsakes and other things that we think would be cool, mementos and souvenirs from there and other things that we, you know, experience. Those are a couple of them. You can get your name in the credits. What am I leaving out, Derek? There's art.
You can be a producer, executive, or associate producer. There's different levels for that. We're looking at T-shirts, patches. We have some pretty big names in the cryptid art world that we're reaching out to now to get some T-shirts and some art made, posters, that kind of thing.
That's a great idea. Yeah.
So we're trying to involve the cryptid community as much as possible, or the, I guess I should say the paranormal. It doesn't have to just be cryptid. We're trying to involve them as much as possible, get some art from some people from around the community and try to spread the message and teach people about this. It's really what we want to do. We want to share this place that we discovered and get people to get on board and realize all the strange stuff that's happening there. And in order to do that, we need a little bit of money and we need some time and get in there and shoot some stuff.
And another thing that's, regardless is if you donate to the Kickstarter or not, we are looking for stories and experiences from people in the area, or if anybody has had anything happen to them down around in there, please let us know. Either go to our Facebook pages or websites or however, you know, we're out there, Monsters Among Us and Blurry Photos. Either one will take any of your experiences. You can actually call Derek's show, leave a voicemail telling it. Derek, what's that number?
It's just leave it in the form of a voicemail and mention at the beginning that it's associated with Anza Borrego or the documentary, and I can find it. The phone number is 1-888-608-NIGHT. It's 1-888-608-NIGHT. It's a toll-free call throughout the U.S. So just give us a call and tell us what you saw and what you experienced. If you want to leave your contact information, that'd be great. Then we can reach out, maybe do an interview over Skype or something like that.
Awesome. Very cool. Yeah, it's very, very exciting, very inspiring. As far as people from the area, we have another member of our show who's really our behind-the-scenes person who you communicated with before me, Andrea. Mm-hmm. And she was really excited that you guys were from in her area, you know. So I'm sure she's invested in this.
I hope she has an experience for it.
Well, she's all about walking around the desert around her house, and you know, at least 3 or 4 times a week, she's posting up crazy airplanes flying by and asking our friend Jake, who was in the military, what they are. So she's invested in looking.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you guys very much for being on the show. If you're in the audience listening and you didn't catch that information, all that information will be available on Radio Wasteland, our Facebook, across the board, and all that stuff. You've been listening to David and Derek here about their upcoming film that will happen because you're so close to the bare bones, Shadows in the Desert. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Chauncey.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.